I was often too slow. All the doctors were. See, the cutters emitted a type of interference that made them invisible to our scanners. We had to go looking by hand. In the end, we found it faster and more merciful to euthanize cutter patients on the spot. He sucked in his cheeks in disgust, remembering mess after bloody, shrieking mess. I hated the outsiders for the cutters, more than hated them. It was ugly, the feeling within me. I thought that the outsiders were animals, monsters, something lesser than me. Yes, lesser. I truly believed that we were better than them, that despite all the blood on our faces, at least we had not stooped that low. But you can already guess what happened next, right? Your side started using cutters too? Yes, but it was worse than that. I learned that the cutters had been our tech to start with. The outsiders had just stolen the idea before we could complete it. They had only done to us what we had planned to do to them. That was the moment in which I no longer knew who the animals were. I no longer wanted to mend our soldiers so that they could go use cutters and... He searched for serviceable words. Sticky fire and germ bombs. I wanted to heal them. Actually, heal them. Sometimes I'd see a body added to the pile, someone I had just put back on her feet a few days earlier. It made me wonder what the point of it all was. He stopped and rumbled in thought for a long, long time. The thought he was arriving at grasped and clung, but he remained in control. One night, one of the other doctors ran into my shelter. She told me to come quickly. I followed her to the surgery, and there, ripped to pieces by a cutter, by our tech, was my youngest mothered child, my daughter. I hadn't even known she was fighting nearby. "Oh, no," Rosemary said. Her voice was soft as leaves. Dr. Sheff wiggled his head up and down, the human gesture for yes. They had given her drugs to block the pain and were preparing the, I don't know what to call it, an injection. The last one we gave to cutter patients. An injection to stop her heart. I shoved the doctor working on her aside. I held her face. She was barely there behind her eyes, but I think she knew who I was. I told her I loved her, and that the pain would be gone soon. I gave her the injection myself. I knew it was the right thing to do, that I be the one to take her back out of the world I had brought her into. She was the last of my children. There had been five of them, all beautiful, gray, speckled girls, and they all became soldiers, as most of our girls did. They died on scorched battlefields far from home. None of my children ever mothered. None of them ever became male. My last child, I didn't love her any more or less than any of the others, but something about knowing that all my children were gone broke me. I couldn't keep my grief at a distance any longer. My thoughts became too big. I had to stop being a doctor. I spent the rest of the war in a quiet home, a place of rest, learning how to steady my mind again. Dr. Sheff, I... Rosemary shook her head from side to side. Her face was wet. I can't imagine. That's good, he said. I wouldn't want you to. A few years later, there were too few daughters on either side for anyone to keep fighting. The germ bombs had mutated into things we couldn't cure. Our water was poisoned. Our mines and forests had nothing left to give. The war didn't end exactly, It just burned itself out. Couldn't you rebuild? Find a colony somewhere to start over? We could have, but we chose not to. Why? He hmmed, considering the best way to explain. We are an old species, Rosemary. There were Grum long before there were humans. After all we had done, all the horrors we had created, both sides decided that perhaps it was time for us to end. We had squandered our time, and we didn't feel that we needed, or perhaps deserved, another chance. The war ended 30 standards ago, but we kept dying from the diseases we designed, or injuries that came back to haunt us. To my knowledge, there has not been another Grum born in decades. There may be somewhere, but it will not be enough. Most Grum did what I did. They left. Who wants to stay on a poison world filled with dead daughters? Who wants to be around others of our kind, knowing the things that every one of us had to do? No. No. Better to leave alone and die gracefully. Rosemary thought in silence. Where did you go? I traveled out to the nearest spaceport and talked my way aboard a trade ship, mixed crew. We mostly hopped between modder rocks and fringe colonies. I earned some credits helping in the kitchen, just cleaning at first, but their cook saw that I had an interest in food, and he indulged my desire to learn. Once I had enough money, I left the ship and made a home for myself on Port Coriel. I had a tiny soup shack near one of the family districts. The cook taught me about soup, you see. Nothing fancy, but it was fast and cheap and good for you. And merchants in a hurry like food that is fast and cheap and good for you. There was a human doctor who lived in the neighborhood, a man named Drave, and he came by often. I liked him a lot, but I was jealous of his profession. He was a family doctor. He'd seen his patients grow from babies to adults with babies of their own. It sounded like such a joy to watch people age and to help them do it healthily. One day, I was finally brave enough to confess to him that I had been a doctor once and that I wanted to use those skills for something good. We made a deal. I could come work with Drave in his clinic for 3 days a 10-day, and he could have free soup whenever he liked. Much better deal for me, I think. So that was my life for 6 standards. Making soup, working in the clinic, taking linking courses on alien anatomy. Oh, and herbs. I found out about herbs during that time. Drave was a good friend to me. Still is. We write from time to time. His grandson took over the soup shack for me, and I started becoming male. Bad time to be working. Bad time to be doing anything, really. The transition isn't easy. He rumbled. His thoughts were straying from the point. He hummed and burred to get them back. Sometime later, this human named Ashby stopped in the clinic to get his bots upgraded. We talked for a long time, and a few days later, he came back to tell me that he was gathering crew for a tunneling ship and offered me a wonderful job. 2 jobs. I was sad to say goodbye to Drave, but what Ashby had offered was exactly what I needed. There is peace out here in the open. I have friends and a garden in the stars and a kitchen full of tasty things. I heal people now. I cannot pretend that the war never happened, but I stopped fighting it long ago. I did not start that war. It should never have been mine to fight. He sank down so that he could look Rosemary square in the eye. We cannot blame ourselves for the wars our parents start. Sometimes the very best thing we can do is walk away. Rosemary was silent for a long time. "The cutters were horrible," she said. "But on some level, I can understand why your people used them. They were at war. They hated each other. My father is not a soldier. He's never been in a war. He doesn't hate the Taremi. I don't know if he's ever even met one. We had everything on Mars, everything. He allowed those weapons to be designed and sold. He encouraged it. And for what? More money? How many people are dead because of what he did? How many people's children?" Dr. Scheff sat back on four. "As you said, he had everything. That made him feel safe and powerful. People can do terrible things when they feel safe and powerful. Your father had probably got his way for so long that he thought he was untouchable, and that is a dangerous way for a person to feel. I don't think anyone on the ship blames you for wanting to get as far away as you could from a person like that. Ashby wasn't exactly pleased. Only about the deception, not about who you are." He glanced back towards the empty kitchen, the empty hallway. "And between you and me, he understands. He's not going to hold it against you, but he's also your boss, and sometimes he has to speak in a way that reminds us of that." He hummed, shifting thoughts. "In a way, I think you must be feeling much the same way as I did the day I found out where the cutters came from. You found something dark within your own house, and you are wondering how much of it has rubbed off on you." Rosemary started to nod, then shook her head. "That's not the same. What happened to you, to your species, it doesn't even compare." "Why? Because it's worse?" She nodded. "But it still compares. You have a fractured bone, and I've broken every bone in my body. Does that make your fracture go away? Does it hurt you any less, knowing that I am in more pain?" "No, but that's not..." "Yes, it is. Feelings are relative, and at the root, they're all the same. Even if they grow from different experiences and exist on different scales." He examined her face. She looked skeptical. "Sissix would understand this. You humans really do cripple yourselves with your belief that you all think in unique ways." He leaned forward. "Your father, the person who raised you, who taught you how the world works, did something unspeakably horrible. And not only did he take part in it, he justified it to himself. When you first learned of what your father had done, did you believe it?" "No. Why not?" "I didn't think he was capable of it." "Why not? He obviously was. He didn't seem like he was. The father I knew never could have done such a thing." "Aha! But he did. So then you begin wondering how you could have been so wrong about him. You start going back through your memories, looking for signs. You begin questioning everything you know, even the good things. You wonder how much of it was a lie. And worst of all, since he had a heavy hand in making you who you are, you begin wondering what you yourself are capable of." Rosemary stared at him. "Yes." Dr. Scheff bobbed his head up and down. "And this is where our species are very much alike. The truth is, Rosemary, that you are capable of anything, good or bad. You always have been, and you always will be. Given the right push, you, too, too could do horrible things. That darkness exists within all of us. You think every soldier who picked up a cutter gun was a bad person? No. She was just doing what the soldier next to her was doing, who was doing what the soldier next to her was doing, and so on and so on. And I bet most of them, not all, but most, who made it through the war spent a long time after trying to understand what they'd done, wondering how they ever could have done it in the first place, wondering when killing became so comfortable. Rosemary's freckled cheeks had gone a little pale. He could see her throat move as she swallowed. All you can do, Rosemary, all any of us can do, is work to be something positive instead. That is a choice that every sapient must make every day of their life. The universe is what we make of it. It's up to you to decide what part you will play. And what I see in you is a woman who has a clear idea of what she wants to be. Rosemary gave a short laugh. Most days, I wake up and I have no idea what the hell I'm doing. He puffed his cheeks. I don't mean the practical details. Nobody ever figures those out. I mean the important thing. The thing I had to do, too. He made a clucking sound. He knew she would not understand it, but it came naturally. The sort of sound a mother made over a child learning to stand. You're trying to be someone good. Day 335, GC Standard 306. Kedrium. Kizzy was up too late, as usual. That had been standard procedure ever since she was a kid. When she was small, Papa would tuck her in with a story and a kiss and a hug from Tumby, her stuffed frog. Moments after the lights went out, her toes would start wiggling, and her butt would follow suit, and before long, the idea of holding still and sleeping seemed super unfair. At regular intervals, Papa would come into her room, lift her away from her building blocks, and tuck her back in, his patient voice growing ever wearier. Finally, Ba would get home from the evening shift at the water station, and he'd say, "Kizzy, sweetheart, please go to sleep. The blocks will be there in the morning, I promise." That was true, but he missed the point. While the actual physical blocks would stay where she left them, her brain was always full of new configurations that she hadn't tried yet. If she didn't get them out before she fell asleep, they'd be totally forgotten by morning. Then she'd be distracted by the promise of pancakes. As an adult, Kizzy had found ways to better manage the blueprints in her brain. She kept her scrib right by her bed so that she could fill it with sketches and notes without leaving the warmth of her blankets. But even so, unfinished projects often kept her up late. It always started with one last circuit, which turned into, "I bet I could fix this," and just a few more tweaks, and then bam, breakfast time. But in the 10 days since the whole Acherak thing, Kizzy had stayed awake for a different reason. Her brain still buzzed with ideas, but she went out of her way to keep herself busy even after they'd all been used up. Tonight, for instance, she was up dusting interface junctions on a space power conduit. It wasn't a vital job. It wasn't even a necessary one. But it was something to do. Dr. Chef had given her some drops to help her sleep, but she didn't like them. They left her feeling fuzzy in the morning, and besides, she didn't want to be the sort of person who needed drops at all. Now, despite the tired, punched face ache that nibbled at her all round the edges, she was going to do this without drops. Somehow, she'd figure out how to lie in bed without her mind drifting back to the cargo bay, guns in her face, Ashby bleeding in her lap. There hadn't been a night since when she hadn't lay there wondering if another ship would sneak up on them while she slept. She imagined Acarax storming up to her room with their guns and shrieking voices. She imagined waking up to a pulse rifle pointed at her, or maybe not waking up at all. She remembered the way the bay doors had screeched as they were forced open. She remembered the thin jet of red that had spurted from Ashby's mouth when the Acarax clocked him with the gun. One of these nights, she'd find a way to stop remembering. But for now, there were a lot of junctions to dust. "Hey, Kizzy," said Lovey through the vox. "Sorry to bug you, but you're the only one awake."
"What's up, Sweet Cheeks?"
"There's a ship approaching, about an hour out." The cleaning rag fumbled. Oh, stars. The Acarax had come back. They'd circled back. Well, not this time, motherfuckers. She'd hide away in a wall panel, seal herself in from the inside so no one would know. She'd scurry through the walls like a mouse, pulling off flashbang sabotage until every last one of the scrawny bastards was dead. If it took 10 days, fine. She'd just duck into the kitchen now and then to steal supplies. She could live in the walls. This was her ship, and who the fuck was she kidding? There was no way she could pull it off. They were dead, totally dead. Why hadn't Ashby just bought a few guns back on Cricket? Dusthead Exodon, even just one gun would...
Lovey continued. "They're signaling us. It's a GC distress signal."
Kizzy exhaled. She felt a smidge of guilt for being relieved that someone else was in trouble, but, oh well. She popped up her scrib against a spool of wire.
"Patch him up through to my vidlink."
The scrib switched on. A female Aeluan stared back at her. And like all members of her species, she was gorgeous. Silver skin, graceful neck, soft eyes, the whole shebang. Kizzy was suddenly very aware of the dirty work suit she was wearing, the messy table, the damn it, crumbs. She had cake crumbs on her shirt. And there was a pixel pen stuck in her hair and, well, whatever. Surely the Aeluan had seen a human tech before. She couldn't blame Kizzy for belonging to a grubby profession or an ugly species.
"Hi there," Kizzy said, brushing herself off. "I'm Kizzy Shao. What's your trouble?"
It was then that she noticed what the Aeluan was wearing. At first glance, the lady was just a snappy dresser, but Kizzy had played enough action sims to know an armored vest when she saw one. Not clunky human style, but one designed to blend in with the rest of her outfit. The Aeluan was seated, but Kizzy could see the end of an energy pistol peeking up over her belt. And there, cuffed round her arm, wasn't that a personal shield generator? Looked new, too. This lady meant business. Like, serious business. That wasn't just protective gear. It was getting shit done because I am the boss gear. Kizzy wished that Jinx was awake. The Aeluan smiled, or at least something face-related that was close enough. "Hello, Kizzy. I'm Captain Gape Tem Seri. I was hoping to speak to your captain. Is he available?"
"He's asleep, but I can wake him up if you..."
No, the Aeluan said. "Don't disturb him. Are you authorized to permit unscheduled dockings?"
Authorized to permit unscheduled dockings? Stars, this lady wasn't messing around. Sure, I guess, Kizzy said. She wasn't sure unscheduled dockings were something that had ever been specifically discussed aboard the Wayfarer. If a ship's friendly and needs help, you help. Simple as that.
The Aeluan nodded. The gesture looked practiced. She obviously knew how to talk with humans. "We've suffered damage to our life support systems. It seems our most recent shipment included a delayed disruptor mine. It didn't go off until we were out in the open."
"Whoa, shit. Are you okay?"
"We have temporary repairs in place, and we've been holding fairly steady for 3 days now.
But we're on our way to Aeluon space, and I'm not sure our stopgap measures will last that long. What we really need is to shut down the core entirely and let our fixbots do their job. And you need a place to hang out in the meantime. No worries. We've got plenty of air to go around. Wait, do you not have a tech? The Aeluon's cheeks darkened into a greenish gray. We ran into some trouble at our last stop. Our tech... She exhaled. Our tech didn't make it. I haven't had a chance to hire a new one yet. Stars, I'm so sorry. Okay, what the hell did this lady do that involved disruptor mines and the kind of trouble that ended in dead techs? The Aeluon didn't say anything further about it. Anyway, if we could come aboard just while our bots do their job, why not let us do it? I'm the mech tech here, and our comp tech knows his way around a life support system. We're better than bots, and depending on the damage, you might not have to take your systems offline. The Aeluon considered this. Are you familiar with Aeluon tech? Well, not like practically, but tech is tech. We can take a look, at least. Promise, I won't touch anything if I don't know what it does. As long as it's no trouble, then yes, I'd appreciate anything you could do. Cool. Yep, definitely. Our ship is less than an hour out from yours, but we could half it if you meet us in the middle. Absolutely. No problem. The Aeluon's face brightened. Wonderful. The lights hanging above her reflected off her scales like sunlight on a wave. Why was everything that the Aeluons did so pretty? I've got a crew of six, five, plus two soldiers. Holy shit, Aeluon commandos! Jinx is gonna wet himself. We'll do our best to keep out of your way. Oh, no worries, that's totally fine, Kizzy said. I'm sure Dr. Chef would love to feed you guys. He's our cook. Wow, that sounded stupid. For once, why couldn't you just sound cool? Yes, I know. Your captain and I are acquaintances, actually. But yes, thank you, Kizzy. I don't know what we would have done if we hadn't found you. How does she know? The thought cut off with a thud. The pieces fell together. Yeah, we're, happy to help. Hey, sorry, what did you say your name was? Gaphe Temseri. Do you need me to send over my ID? No, I just, are you Pei? The Aeluon paused and glanced over her shoulder. Yes, she said. The sound from her talkbox had gone soft, secret. That's a nickname I let my friends use, Ashby included. Kizzy grinned so hard she thought her face would break. This lady, this insanely beautiful badass who wore energy pistols and said things like disruptor mine without kidding around, was Pei. Ashby didn't just know this Aeluon. Ashby was banging this Aeluon. Captain, sorry, I don't know which name to call you by. Aeluons had two last names, one for their family and one for where they were from. She wasn't sure which was which. Captain Tem is fine. Well, Captain Tem, I think I'm speaking for my captain and all the rest of us when I say that you're welcome to come aboard for as long as you like. Thank you, Kizzy. Captain Tem paused again. I'm not quite sure how to ask this. Kizzy got it. Captain Tem was an Aeluon, with an Aeluon crew, with Aeluon soldiers on board, and she was about to come aboard her human boyfriend's ship. Kizzy leaned forward, wiping the grin off her face. Yes, we all know how to be polite, meaning keep our mouths shut, especially around soldiers.
Captain Tam looked grateful. Thanks, Kizzy. I appreciate that. I'll signal again when we've reached your coordinates.
Sounds good. See you soon!
The vidlink panel on the Scrib flicked off. Kizzy started laughing.
Oh, man.
So cool!
So cool.
Hey, Lovey! She called to the Vox. Wake up, Jinx! Sizzix, too! I need to talk to them right now.
What about Ashby?
No, I want to wake him up myself so I can see his face.
Nosy.
Says you.
The AI laughed. Do you really think Captain Tem will let Jinx aboard her ship? He'd like that very much.
Lovey, I have a feeling that this little rendezvous is going to be awesome for everybody.
Ashby's brain wasn't working right. For starters, he'd been startled out of 3 hours of sleep by Kizzy, who had decided to wake him up by hacking the lock on his door and turning on all the lights. Then she'd told him the most incomprehensible thing. Pay was coming aboard. Pay. Here. On his ship. And she'd been talking to Kizzy, of all people. Do you have any idea what Kizzy said to her? He was in the bathroom, finishing the fastest shower of his life. Sizzix answered from the opposite side of the shower curtain. He could hear the amusement in her voice. It was the sound of the look she'd been wearing for the past 10 minutes.
I have no idea, she said,
but she didn't even realize who she was talking to at first.
I think your reputation is intact.
Ashby switched off the shower, blotted himself dry, and wrapped his towel around his waist. He stepped out into the room and grabbed a Dentbot pack from the communal basket. He caught a glimpse of himself in the mirror. I look like shit. He pulled back the seal on the pack and squeezed the gel onto his tongue. He tossed the empty package and pressed his lips together. He could feel the gel spread itself around his mouth as the bot searched for plaque and bacteria. Sizzix leaned against the wall, holding a mug between her claws.
You do not. And even if you did, I highly doubt she'll care.
Mm-hmm.
What?
Ashby rolled his eyes and let the bots do their job, wishing they'd work a little faster. After a minute or so, the gel went thin, indicating that the bots had begun to break down. He spat the vaguely minty goo into a sink and rinsed it down the drain.
I said I care. I know, and it's very cute that you do.
He put his hands on the edge of the sink and looked into the mirror. His eyes had a hint of red, and his hair had seen better days. He sighed. I don't want to screw things up for her. Sizzix stepped over and put her hand between his shoulder blades.
You won't, and neither will the rest of us. No jokes, no innuendos. We know how serious this is.
She pointed to a stack of clothes resting on the counter. That's the least wrinkly pair of trousers I could find. She handed him the mug.
And I had Dr. Chef make you some of this awful stuff.
The smell hit his nose before he even brought the cup to his face.
Coffee. You are the best.
He tipped the rim of the mug between his lips. Dark, bitter, strong. He felt better already. Sizzix patted his forearm.
Come on, put on your trousers. I want to meet the woman who gets to take them off.
A short while later, he was standing in front of the airlock, surrounded by the self-appointed welcoming committee. Sizzix, Dr. Chef, and the techs. Caffeine, adrenaline, and the need for sleep all battled for supremacy, chasing each other around like a pack of dogs. He felt like hell.
So, Ashby, Jenk said, you gonna tell us how you two met?
Ashby sighed. Not right now. Jenks grinned. He'd been doing that a lot this morning.
I'll wait.
He pulled his red reed tin from a pocket. Dr. Chef nudged him. No red smoke. Aliwans are often allergic. Jenks closed the tin.
Real allergic, right? Not Corbin allergic?
Dr. Chef let out a percussive laughing chord.
Real allergic.
The Aeluan ship is now extending their docking tube, Lovey said. Ashby could hear metallic clanking against the hull. Their hatch is open. I'm initiating decontamination protocols. Ashby could hear footsteps beyond the airlock doors. Oh, stars, she's here. She's in there right now. He exhaled. Sissix rubbed her cheeks on his shoulder. Nervous? Why would you say that? Sissix rested her chin against his neck and squeezed his arm. Ashby's mouth twitched. He knew it was a friendly, reassuring gesture, and Pei probably knew enough about Andrisks to know what Sissix meant by it. But something in his human brain balked at the idea of Pei walking in to see another woman draped over his shoulder. He lowered his voice. Sis, sorry, but could you not, Her yellow eyes searched his face, confused. Oh, right. She moved a step away and clasped her hands behind her back. She didn't say another word, but Ashby could see the laughter in her eyes. Ashby, there's something weird here, Lovey said.
What's up? Some kind of bug?
No contaminants, but I'm confused. Their patch scans all check out, but there are supposed to be two soldiers with them. All I'm getting are civilian patches.
They're probably undercover, Ashby said. It's okay to let them in, Lovey. I trust them.
So cool,
Jenks whispered to Kizzy. They both giggled like school kids. Stars and fire, you two, behave. The doors slid open. The airlock was full of people, but Ashby only had eyes for one of them. He was very much awake now. Pei stepped forward. Permission to come aboard? She said, looking deep into Ashby's eyes. The air seemed to crackle between them. She had to play the captain now, but he could see that she wanted to say much more. He nodded. All was understood.
Come out of the open and into our home, he said. It was an exit expression, one used for newly docked travelers. It's good to see you.
He extended his hand. This was a joke, though neither of their crews would get it. He knew full well that Aeluans pressed their palms in greeting, but he hadn't known that when he'd first met Pei, and likewise, she hadn't known what to do with his hand after she held it.
Good to see you too, old friend.
She shook his hand, noting the gesture with nothing more than a slight flicker of her eyelids. Damn, she was good at this. If he hadn't understood the need for secrecy, he might have been offended by her nonchalance. Introductions were made. Pei shook hands with the techs, pressed palms with Sissix, of course Sissix knew what to do, and laughed with Dr. Chef while trying to figure out his hand feet. Ashby worked his way through Pei's crew, pretending as if he didn't know their names, moods, and personal histories already. He knew that two of them, Sula and Oxlin, knew about him and Pei. Their eyelids flicked with acknowledgement as he met them. As far as he was aware, they were the only Aeluans in the galaxy who knew. He was going to do his damnedest to keep it that way. The two soldiers, though dressed in civilian clothing, were easy to spot. For one thing, they were armed more heavily than the others, which Ashby found somewhat unsettling. And their muscles were toned to perfection. One of them, a female, had an ocular implant. The end of an old scar jutted down below it. The male was young, but carried a weariness with him. Ashby wondered how long he'd been at war, and if he was glad for the respite of a cargo run. Ashby glanced at Pei, who was sharing pleasantries with his crew. He'd imagined her on his ship so many times, but his daydreams had played out differently. Pei would step through the airlock, with nothing but a bag over her shoulder and a smile in her eyes. He'd put his arm around her waist as he introduced her. Sissix wouldn't have to hold back her welcoming hug. They'd go to the fishbowl, where all his favorite people would get to know each other over one of Dr. Chef's celebratory dinners. They'd drink mech and laugh, lounging easily in the garden, a simple blending of the two halves of his life. But here in the airlock, the separation was clear. Military and civilian. Aeluans and a mixed species hodgepodge. High tech and the best that they could do. But even so, she was still on his ship, talking to his crew. The lines between their lives had become blurred. He could feel her pulling him across the divide. "I can't believe how lucky we were to find you out here," Pei said. "I hope we weren't inconveniencing you." "Stay as long as you need. Or just stay, period. I hear our techs have volunteered to help with repairs."
"We're all ready to go," Kizzy said, hands on her tool belt buckle. "You just point us in the right direction."
"Oxlin will go with you," Pei said.
"I'm no tech," said Oxlin, Pei's pilot, a tall male with light eyes. "But I can tell you the basics of what's what."
The female soldier, Tack, if Ashby remembered correctly, spoke up. "I was hoping that we might have access to your scanners in Ansible. I highly doubt we will encounter enemy contacts out here. But given what happened aboard our ship, we can't be too careful."
"Sissix can show you the control room," Ashby said. "Unless you'd like manual access to our AI core."
Out of the corner of his eye, Ashby could see Jenks stiffen at the suggestion.
"Relax, Jenks. They're not gonna break her."
"Your control room should be fine," Tack said. She nodded to Sissix, who led the way down the hall.
Ashby could not have imagined an odder-looking pair. The armed Aeluan missing an eye, and the Andrisk in low-slung trousers and a fresh coat of swirls painted on her claws.
"As for the rest of us," Pei said, "I'm afraid all we can do is wait."
"Oh, I don't think that'll be so bad," Dr. Chef said. "It's just about time for me to start preparing breakfast. Though, fair warning, my recipes weren't exactly made with Aeluans in mind. This might be the worst breakfast you've ever had."
The male soldier laughed.
"You've never had field rations."
"You'd be surprised," Dr. Chef puffed his cheeks. Ashby smiled.
Few things made Dr. Chef happier than feeding hungry people.
"Come along with me. Let's have a look through my Stacy, see what appeals to you."
"Please, tell me you have real mech on board," one of Pei's crew said. He had a gun strapped across his back that would have made Bear and Nib weep with envy.
Did they really have to wear weapons here?
"Plenty of mech," Kizzy said. "Big old boxes of it."
"Oh, stars, that's great news. If I have to drink another cup of pre-packaged stuff, I'm gonna be sick."
"Only one cup each," Pei said. "I'm not getting back on my ship with a fuzzy-eyed crew."
"Come on, come on, all of you," Dr. Chef said, leading the way out of the airlock, walking on two. "I'm not letting you leave hungry."
The remaining Aeluans followed eagerly.
"Leave some for me,"
Oxlin called after them as he led the techs back through the airlock. Kizzy snuck one last glance at Pei and wiggled her eyebrows at Ashby. He rolled his eyes and shooed her away with his hand. She scampered off, chuckling. They waited until the hallway was silent. Even then, Ashby wasn't sure what to say. He wanted to kiss her, hold her, run up to his room and let her tear off his clothes. Somehow he held it back.
"So, this is unexpected."
She stared at him. Her second eyelids closed slowly. Her cheeks turned a displeased shade of yellow. "There is a scatterburst burn on your hull."
"You always say the most romantic things."
"Ashby," she glared. "You said in your last message that you got boarded and that you lost some supplies. You said nothing about getting fired upon. Was anyone hurt?"
"No."
He paused.
"Just me, but I'm fine."
Her cheeks swam with exasperated colors.
"Why didn't you say anything?"
"Because I didn't want you to worry."
She cocked her head. "We seem to have traded places."
Hardly. Who's the one showing up on my doorstep talking about disruptor mines?
There was only the one mine, and no one was hurt. It seems someone at the loading bay had an opinion about the war.
Ashby shook his head. The Rosk are attacking border colonies. How?
I know. People are crazy.
She frowned. And speaking of, the more I hear about this Taremi situation, the less I like it.
You didn't like it from the start.
Ashby, listen. I met the captain of a pinhole tug that's been ferrying diplomats out there. The Taremi, they're strange.
They're a different species. We're all strange to each other. You're strange to me sometimes.
No, I mean dangerous strange. Incomprehensible strange. She said she couldn't understand how the GC had brokered an alliance with them at all. The diplomats, they kept talking about how hard it was to communicate with them. It wasn't a matter of language. The Taremi just think differently. They try to all think exactly the same things in exactly the same way, which is insane enough, but everything goes to shit if they can't find consensus. That captain, she told me that a few standards back, when the GC finally got their foot in the door, a few Taremi tore each other apart. I mean literally, Ashby, during a conference, because they couldn't agree on whether or not Harmagians were sapient.
I'm sure they've figured that much out by now.
Maybe. All I know is that she heard of several times where a Taremi delegate didn't voice agreement with its higher-ups during a meeting and then was never seen again. She hated going out there. She said she got scared every time one of their ships got close. She didn't trust them, and neither do I.
You've never met them, Pei? They wouldn't be sending us all the way to the core if they didn't think they could keep us safe. We'll be fine. Don't worry.
Her cheeks flashed pale purple with frustration. I can't even keep the people on my own ship safe. How am I supposed to not worry about you?
He looked down the hallway, just to be sure. He took her hand.
Kizzy said you lost someone.
She shut her eyes.
Sari.
He squeezed her hand tight, fighting the urge to take her into his arms.
Stars, Pei. I'm so sorry.
It was pointless, Ashby. So fucking pointless. He got jumped in an alley while we were on Dresk. They cut out his patch and stole the tech he'd picked up that day. If he hadn't been alone...
Hey. He reached up to cup her cheek. The hell with it. Hey now. Don't go there.
She pressed her cheek into his palm, ever so briefly, then pulled back, her eyes flicking down the hall.
I've missed you so much, she said. These last 10 days, I wanted to write to you, but...
I know, he said, and smiled. Come on, I'll show you my ship, and we can talk.
Touring the ship is a respectable sort of activity, right?
There was a tiny flash of amused green in her cheeks.
Yeah.
What did you tell them, anyway, about you and me?
That we met on Port Coriel, right after I bought my ship. I met you there during a supply run, and sometimes we meet for a drink when we wind up at the same dock.
Uh-huh. The truth.
Well, the innocuous part of it, anyway. To be honest, it felt a little strange.
Her cheeks went yellow.
I've got used to lying about you.
I feel like I should have left my shoes at the door, Jenks said to Kizzy as they followed Oxlin through the corridors of the Aeluan frigate.
Kizzy nodded. She'd seen Aeluan ships in dock, and linking pics of what they looked like inside, but being inside one, it was like walking through a piece of art. The grayish walls were pristine, not a bolt or panel to be seen. She couldn't see any individual light fixtures, just continuous strips of soft light emanating from the curved ceiling. No window frames, no visible air filters. It was a ship as smooth and seamless as stone.
and silent, too. Though Aeluans had given themselves the means to process sound and verbal speech, they only needed those abilities to communicate with other species. Within their own ships, they had no use for sound. There were no voxes or klaxons or panels that beeped and chirped. Even the sounds of the life support systems and anti-grav nets were so low that Kizzy could barely make them out, though she doubted their quietness was engineered on purpose. More likely, they were just extremely well designed. The absence of sound made the ship seem all the more hallowed, like a temple built to honor good tech. Her and Jenk's big, stompy boots and clanking tool belts felt intrusive. She was glad that she'd had the time to change into a relatively clean jumpsuit. "Life support's in here," Oxlin said. He placed his palm on the wall, and a portion of it melted open. As Kizzy walked through the opening, she could see the surrounding frame, the predefined edges of the door, solid as the thickest plex. "What is this stuff?" Kizzy asked, running her palm over the wall, cold and firm, but she could feel a latent pliability beneath. "Some sort of responsive polymer?" "Yes. It's held in place by an electrostatic lattice, which responds to the bioelectrical signals in our skin." "Wow." Kizzy leaned closer to the wall, squinting. "What's it made of?" "That's beyond my area of expertise. I'm sure you could look it up in the linkings." They walked into a room filled with a tangle of tech. Way, way better looking than the stuff Kizzy was used to, but recognizable all the same. Oxlin gestured to a large apparatus, the heavy heart at the center of a network of tubes and pipes. "This is your atmospheric regulator." Kizzy put her hands on her hips and nodded as she inspected it. "Looks an awful lot like ours." "Except a hell of a lot prettier," Jenks said. "Check out those stabilizers." "Wow," Kizzy said. "Look at the interlocking seals. Awesome, 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 awesome." She craned her head towards Oxlin. "Where was the mine?" "Top left corner, tucked behind the..." Oxlin made a vague gesture. "That lump with the little knob on it." Kizzy climbed up the side of the regulator, taking care to rest her weight on the sturdiest pipes. Behind the relay hub, the lump with the little knob on it, was a patch of torn metal, the end result of a fierce energy discharge. She pulled her tech lenses from her belt and slipped them over her head. She peered through the magnification lens as she pried up the metal and looked inside. "Wow," she said. "All those nodes around here are fried. The filter relays are 10 kinds of fucked up. Your fixbots patched them up okay, but this needs more than..." "Holy shit, look at that. Wow." She flipped the lens aside, put on her gloves, and reached into the hole. "What's up?" Jenks asked. Kizzy felt around, running her protected fingers over the mangled machinery. The entire regulator shaft stripped. Nasty piece of work. "Should I go get some filler sheets?" "Yeah, and grab your small tools while you're at it. There's a whole circuit panel in here and you'll need to rewire. And snacks, Jenks, we're gonna need a shitload of snacks for this." She rubbed her left eye, pushing away the sleepiness. She was starting her day without having gone to bed, but that was hardly anything new. She had a thermos of happy tea clipped to her belt and a pack of Stims in her pocket in case things got really dire. "It'll do." "So you can fix it?" Oxlin said. "Oh, yeah," Kizzy said. She looked Oxlin in the eye and placed her hand over her heart. "Believe me when I say that there's nothing I'd rather do than fix this thing." Rosemary sat perched on a stack of empty vegetable crates, snacking on pepper puffs. Sissix was with her, leaning against one of Dr. Chef's bug-breeding tanks. The curtain separating the storage room from the kitchen was pulled back, but not all the way. The Stacy hummed. The bugs skittered. It was a good place for gossip. "They're so pretty," Rosemary said, looking out at the Aeluans, happily stuffing their faces round the dinner table.
I wish I had scales.
You say that, Sizzix said. Be happy you have skin that doesn't shed all in one go.
Do Ilyuan's molt?
No, the bastards.
She took a few puffs from the bowl sitting in Rosemary's lap.
How do you see them?
I know attractiveness is relative.
True, but Ilyuan's are the universal exception. They're stupidly pretty.
Sizzix crunched her puffs. Harmagians probably disagree.
Harmagians don't get a say in this.
Why?
Because they have no bones and are covered in goo.
Rosemary chuckled. That's not their fault.
It's still true, Sizzix grinned. Look at them, though. She nodded toward the Ilyuan's. Look at the way they move. Even little things like that one. Look at the way she picked up her cup. They don't move. They dance.
She took another handful of puffs.
They make me feel like... Oh, what are those big ugly reptiles you have back on Earth? The extinct ones?
Rosemary racked her brain. I don't know. Iguanas?
I don't know what those are. I don't mean things lost in the collapse. I mean the old reptiles, the ones millions of years ago.
Dinosaurs?
Yes.
Sizzix haunched over, tucking her arms up and exaggerating the angle of her bent legs. She stomped around the storage room, shifting her weight clumsily. Rosemary cracked up. You're not a dinosaur!
You don't know that. You weren't there. Maybe some of them built ships and left.
Rosemary let her eyes trail over Sizzix. Polished green scales, festive quills, artful swirls painted round her claws, the way her trousers hung just so over her strange hips. Even when goofing off amid old crates and edible bugs, she was lovely.
You're too pretty to be a dinosaur, she said.
She felt her cheeks flush as she said it.
She hoped it didn't show. That's a relief, Sizzix said, straightening up. They didn't have the best of luck, if I recall. What was it? Gamma ray burst?
Impact event.
Too bad. The galaxy could use a few more reptiles.
To be fair, though, them dying out made room for us weird furry things. Sizzix laughed and gave Rosemary's shoulder a friendly squeeze.
And I am fond of you weird furry things.
Rosemary smiled and got to her feet. You want some fizz? She said, walking to the cooler.
Yes, please. These puffs have a kick.
Sizzix watched the Ilyuan's as Rosemary searched for drinks. I've heard it's very scary to encounter them in combat. No yelling or noise. Just a bunch of silent people coming to kill you.
Ugh,
Rosemary said. She handed Sizzix a frosty bottle of melon fizz.
That's creepy.
You ever hear of the Battle of T'Krit?
Sizzix said. She looked at the long-necked bottle in her hand.
I need an Askarik-friendly cup.
Oh, right, sorry, Rosemary said. She stepped through the doorway and opened the cupboard outside in search of something that someone without lips could drink from. Out at the far end of the kitchen, Corbin appeared at the counter. He gave the briefest of glances their way as he poured himself a mug of tea from the communal decanter. Sizzix didn't acknowledge him, but Rosemary could see her feathers fluff ever so slightly.
What's the Battle of T'Krit?
Territory skirmish back before the GC, when we were all snatching up habitable planets as fast as we could. One of the few times Ilyuan's and Andrisk's clashed. Just a squabble, really. We were never formally at war. The story goes that late one night, three groups of Ilyuan soldiers snuck into the base on T'Krit, dead quiet, like I said, and coming in from all sides.
What did the Andrisks do?
Rosemary said, handing Sizzix a cup. Sizzix grinned.
They turned off the lights. Ilyuan's can't see in infrared.
Rosemary imagined being inside a pitch-black building, filled with silent soldiers being picked off by unseen claws reaching through the darkness. She shivered.
Speaking of Ilyuan's, Sizzix said, I'm dying to know where our captain is. She turned toward the Vox. Hey, Lovey.
Nope, Lovey said.
Sissix and Rosemary exchanged amused looks.
Nope,
Sissix said. You heard me. No way.
Please, you don't have to say what they're doing. Just tell me where.
Oh, no. I seem to have a circuit problem. I can't talk to you anymore.
The Vox switched off.
Rosemary and Sissix started to laugh, but the fun died as Corbin approached the storage room.
Do you know when Kizzy and Jenks are coming back?
He addressed the question directly to Rosemary.
They've been gone 5 hours.
Sorry, I don't know, Rosemary said.
Rough estimate?
I really have no idea, Corbin huffed.
The mixer they replaced last 10 day jammed again, and the sensors aren't responding. I have a drum that's on the brink of going tacky.
Rosemary wanted to comment that the Aeluans had a ship that was running out of air, but if Sissix could bite her tongue, so could she. If I see them before you do, I'll send them your way.
I'd appreciate that.
He gave a curt nod and left. Rosemary turned to Sissix, who was contemplating something within her cup. What's up? Sissix inhaled, as if surfacing from a deep thought.
Oh, I was just exploring the idea of telling the Aeluans that Corbin is a Rosk spy.
Rosemary snorted.
I'm sure they treat their prisoners well.
Well, that's the thing. I doubt a civilian ship like that has facilities for transporting captured spies. She sipped her drink. I bet they'd make good use of the airlock, though.
The wrench fell from Kizzy's hand and clattered down behind the regulator. Oops! She climbed down the pipes, making her way to the space between the machinery and the wall.
You want me to get it? Jenks asked.
Nah, there's plenty of space.
Kizzy jumped down to the floor and began hunting for the errant tool. After a few steps forward, she paused. Something wasn't right. She turned around and looked at the wall. There was a hatchway there, but it wasn't properly melting into the surrounding wall. The seam around it flickered, as if someone was activating and deactivating the door faster than it could respond.
Hey, Oxlin, Kizzy called.
Yes?
Is there a service panel back here?
I think so. Why?
Looks like it's malfunctioning.
Kizzy thought about the way the walls worked.
Could something be interfering with the structural lattice? A wonky circuit or something? Anything generating a signal?
I suppose. I don't really know. Do you think the mine damaged the door?
Kizzy looked back up at the regulator. The relay hub was a long way up. She shook her head.
I doubt it. Nothing else this far down was damaged.
Kizzy pressed her hand against the panel. She could feel the polymer beneath her fingers liquefy, though that wasn't quite the right word because the wall didn't feel wet. Just fluid. Kizzy gave a little laugh.
Cool.
The panel melted aside. The frame twitched and wiggled, but it held in place. She stuck her head into the wall and switched on the two little glow bulbs attached to her lenses. The wall held power conduits, fuel tubes, waste lines, all the things you'd expect to see within a ship's wall. She stepped inside. There was a narrow service pathway there, big enough for a lone tech. The pathway led upwards, disappearing into the darker regions of the ship's innards. She gazed around, looking for a sparking circuit or a leaking tube. A small flash of yellow light caught her eye. Just a little way above her head, easily within arm's reach, a strange object clung to a bundle of fuel tubes. Flat, black, round. Like a metallic jellyfish, tendrils wrapped tight. It was obviously of a different make to the surrounding tech, but Kizzy couldn't quite place it. There was another flash, then a pause, then a flash again. What the hell? She muttered. She reached towards it, but before her fingers made contact,
She froze. Another flash appeared in the corner of her eye. She craned her head up to follow the pathway. There was another one of the objects, positioned a few paces away from her. Then another. And another. She turned off her glow bulbs, stretched out in a steady line, disappearing into the dark. A row of tiny yellow lights blinked in rhythm. With a rising horror, she realized what they were. Kizzy threw herself back against the wall as if it burned. Run, she thought. Run. But she didn't run. She stared. Kizzy? Jenks called. You okay in there? She swallowed hard, trying to work some spit back into her mouth. Mines, she said. What was that? Mines, she said louder. The wall. The entire fucking wall. It's full of mines. And big ones, too. Earlier, she'd found a piece of casing from the one that had knocked out the atmospheric regulator. Intact, it had probably been as wide across as her pinky. These ones were about the size of an outstretched hand. Things that big weren't made for knocking out an isolated system. Things that big were made to go boom. Back in the room, Jenks and Oxlin were making a lot of noise, talking over each other, calling their respective captains. But to Kizzy, they seemed distant. Her heart was in her ears. Her muscles started to shake. Her body begged to get away. But a quiet thought cut through the panic, holding her steady. How long before they go off? She thought about this. If they were ready to go off in seconds, running away wouldn't make any damn difference. Not for her, not for the cargo ship, not for the Wayfarer. But if there was more time, even just a minute or two, maybe, could she? She looked at the evil metal jellyfish nearest to her. Explosive or not, it was still a machine. She understood machines. Machines followed rules. Oxlade.